Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al at Burn on the Board, Greg Pappas in studio. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 35. Interesting weekend. We don't really have in the Dow, we got Goldman Sachs up 4. Nothing crazy. Tesla's up 2. NVIDIA is actually down $1.40. So kind of a quiet morning so far. We know we have a shortened week because the 4th of July is Thursday and we're getting out on the markets are closing on 12 o'clock on Wednesday, correct, Greg?
You forgot to mention Chewy.
I'm not big on Little Kitty. What's his name, Little Kitty?
I don't know, but it's up 17%, trading 31.
Whenever I see that, all I keep thinking about is market top when that kind of stuff happens. I'm just, nobody even knows this guy, but the momentum trading. Plus, I like that it all happens overnight. And if I had my view of the world, nothing would trade overnight. But that's nobody wants my view of the world.
It went from, I don't know, like 20 to 30 or 25 to 30 or something.
Are we talking Chewy Garcia, our representative?
Chewy Garcia.
No, this is Chewy the stock.
Chewy the stock.
And what's the symbol of this thing?
CHWY.
And what do they do?
I think it's like a subscription pet service.
Oh, that's right.
Pet food.
There you go. they're worth $1 zillion, I'm sure. You buy pet food anywhere you want, right?
Yeah, it's a $12 billion company right now.
Oh, there you go. What's it trading for? $200 billion
now? Well, the market cap is 12.
All right.
It's been, back in the 21 when Ryan Cohen or whatever was and Roy and Kitty were really pumping. I think it got up to like 100 or 120, so probably three times where it's now.
Okay.
Maybe four. I don't particularly remember. It's flash in the pan. Now it's come all the way back down and Keith Gill has taken 9 million shares or something.
Now, we really should have a pet food maker with a PE of 160, you think?
Sounds right to me.
Yeah, why not? Isn't that unbelievable?
Why not? I mean,
the average historical PE ratio of Chewy for the last 3 years is guess how much?
No idea.
1,221.
Oh, nice.
The current PE ratio of 142 is 88% less than the historical average. I guess it's a buy. God. Analyzing the last 3 years, Chewy's...
Who wrote that?
No, I just said that.
Oh.
No, it's 88% less than the historical average.
Oh, my gosh.
Chewy's P.E. ratio reached its highest point in August of 2021 at 40...
The stock was over $100, wasn't it?
The P.E. ratio was 41.85. when the price was 83.70.
Not 41.85. Yeah. It was...
The stock was 83.70, and the earnings per share were 2 cents.
Can we talk about how did he get all this money? First, he had $200 million in what's it called, GME, and now he's got $200 million in what's in Chewy.
I don't know. He had $200 million supposedly, including the options if he exercised them in the other one.
Okay, so.
Plus, why do we believe him?
Well, it's a federal filing, or it's a government filing.
And what?
He had like 7 or 9 million shares of this Chewy thing he disclosed.
To who? We don't have to disclose it if you have shares. Unless you're over 5% of the company.
He's got more than 5%, yeah. Is it 13G? Which one?
Or something, yeah, because we used to have the... guy used to report it on the way back in the day when I traded equities.
Yeah, he's got a 6.6% passive stake in the online food and product retailer.
All right, well.
So that's worth, well, 9 million Class A shares, and it, I think it was trading 27, so it's $240-some million.
Let me throw the thing up. I never thought I'd be putting Chewy up on my board.
So he swapped his GameStop for Chewy.
Yeah, well. I don't see a pet delivery company, a pet chow delivery company worth, you know, whatever. Then again, it's not up to me to value this stuff.
Yeah, we didn't see Tesla as a behemoth either.
Well,
so
I mean, there's more money potentially in being an innovator in space and cars than there is in pet food.
How do you know?
Well, I mean, because I think you can buy pet food everywhere, can't you?
I don't know. Maybe we're going to start eating pet food because we're so poor.
Did you see I saw the Cora thing last week. Somebody sends in there, he goes, he's been banned from Costco.
Who's been banned?
Some retired guy. And he was in Costco, this is he claims, he's in Costco, and he's got these two big bags of dog food.
Great stock, right?
Yeah, well, he's got these two big bags of dog food. And so the lady behind him says, by the way, do you have a dog? Well, so he says, oh, no, I'm actually so poor that I eat the dog food.
Oh, my gosh.
And she goes, really? He goes, yeah, it's the same protein and stuff as human food, but it's a lot cheaper. No. And she goes, well, how's it going? He goes, well, I feel fine. It's just like there's one problem. And she goes,
oh, no.
She goes, what's that? He goes, every time I walk by a fighter, I don't have to pee on her. So they ousted him from Costco, he claims, or his local Costco, for causing this commotion. Anyway. One of the problems, Greg, and you're getting there. You're not there yet. Don't ever get there, by the way. When you host a show like this, and you, or maybe you just get older, you have an amazing observation of the world, right? So you see stuff you never saw before, and you just kind of put it together, and you go, "What the hell's going on?" Well, first of all, the guy upstairs in my building sends me a missive about some fine citizen. Yeah, being...
I suspect you're being sarcastic there.
Yeah, some guy, offender charged with attempted murder, home invasion, and aggravated battery of a 25-year-old male. Now, this is a block from my house. This is right across the street from Tripoli.
Oh, no.
So, but they apprehend the guy on my block.
Oh.
At least they apprehended the guy.
Yeah, you know. Got him.
So he's being charged with one felony count, attempted murder first degree, home invasion, aggravated battery, use of a deadly weapon. There you go. So that happens. Now, you look around and you see this incredible disdain for the law, and you think that, you know, it's segregated in some communities. You know, we don't want to go racial here, but it really isn't. And maybe in that degree it might be to some extent, but so I drive out to Orland and Stevenson, and I see there's a lot of traffic, and I see people hitting the shoulder with like Land Rover Discoveries. They're all rich and white, right? They're not. So they have a total disdain for anything. I see one guy went by me 100 miles an hour. LaGrange Road, the same thing. And Audrey and I go to this place on Saturday night and to see if it's open, and it's not, but we stop and had an ice cream at the place across the street. Driving home on this rural road, and only two cars in the whole place, me and the guy behind me. This loser behind me, you know, he's some white kid. He is so close to me, I only saw his headlights twice.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine how close he was? We're talking about a rural road with nobody on it but the two of us.
He was real in a hurry.
He was something. And I'm sitting there going, all right, do I tap on the brakes to shake this guy up? Or if he's all high, he might just run into me.
Yeah.
Do I stop at the light?
A little risky.
Do I stop at the light and get out? What if he's got like five people in there? Plus I'm a little too old to be fighting.
I got a good YouTube channel for you.
You know Mike Royko said that he really wanted in his car? He wanted the trunk to be able to come up and have like a machine gun. sticking out of the back of the trunk if somebody was too close.
Like in Breaking Bad.
Yeesh.
Yeah. I mean, okay. This is
during the break. I got to show you. There's a YouTube channel called Road Rift Reviews.
Oh God.
And it's just all road rage, and they've got some commentary, but the main thing is there's dash cam footage of all these road rage incidents, and in the usually, you know, it's pretty good. I mean,
well, you know what? It's kind of scaring me a little bit.
Yeah, millions of views on YouTube.
You know, people have no. Well, a lot of people don't have any common sense or you know, what's kind of scaring
like to
me.
Reiterate my position that common sense doesn't exist.
Very much so. But you know what's scaring me more is people don't seem to have any. Some don't seem to have any sense of space awareness, like they never played sports and everything like that. When people cut you off, you know, in traffic, just to change lanes or something, it's one thing if they cut you off. It's quite another if they miss you, like, by a foot and don't even realize it. Mm. You know, it's like, doesn't that person even know where his car is? So then the
there's a pretty funny Family Guy clip.
Oh, I'm sure. Uh-huh. So then the coup de grace, and I'm going to tell you my debate story with somebody I was talking to. We'll go nameless. So I go into Myers, and of course, it's 7:30 in the morning, and all these people are in the check themselves out line. Now, why they are doing that when there's two people over there to check you out with nothing to do? So I, of course, go in the regular checkout aisle, and I say to the very attractive young lady, I said, by the way, are those people getting a discount over there? Or why do they want to put you out of business? She goes, I have no idea. So all of a sudden, some middle-aged lady starts yelling loudly for help over in the check yourself out line. I need some help over here. So the young lady looks up at me. She goes, do you mind? I said, no, it's 7:30. I got nowhere really to go. Knock yourself out.
Well, that was nice of you.
Well, I'm trying. I'm an easygoing sort. So guess what the lady's issue was?
The thing wasn't weighing the blueberries the right way.
Close. She had picked out a whole watermelon. And there's no sticker on no scan sticker on, like, the watermelon.
Everyone knows you just search by word or picture.
This lady obviously did not. Why she with this big ass watermelon didn't come in the first line where the lady was standing there by herself anyway, I have no idea. So the girl runs over, helps the lady, and she comes back and she goes, she's okay now. And I said, I think you fixed her with her watermelon problem, but I'm going to say she's definitely not okay. She looks at me, she goes, you're probably right. So then I get into a discussion regarding the debate the other night and politics, which I, you know, really don't want to do, especially with people close to me. And
you're not even on Twitter. You don't have the latest.
Well, get a load of this. There's a piece of paper in here that I'll find because I'm cleaning. You would notice it by looking at the place. It has to do with why people get on one side or the other of the political game. It has to do with essentially some mental laziness, but one is, the main thing is that you really don't, it's not really worth it. Your vote, collectively, your vote is a real important thing. Individually, we all know whether I trundle my ass down the block and vote for somebody or not.
You sound like a cynic.
Well, I mean, it's one vote. Plus, if it's in Illinois, it doesn't make any difference anyway. Or if you're in a red state and you're voting one way or the other, whatever. We know your vote doesn't count for all that much, even though collectively it's our right and we should do it. So you end up deciding it's not worth your time to spend, like, literally hours a week keeping up on the issues.
Well, we know that. That's why participation is so low.
Yeah, well, and then you end up, when you look at a issue, you say, okay, I'm on the right or I'm on the left. Where does this fall, right or left? And that's my position. Instead of, which I think on the show, what we try and do is look at every issue and we try and take it apart as it is and not whether we're one side or the other. I mean, even we have people here who lean one way or the other. But so the discussion comes down to how Biden has destroyed the oil industry and how when Trump was in office, we were energy sufficient. And I said, first of all, that is not true. And then I made the big mistake of saying, when was the last time you looked at the oil production tables? And it was just blank stare, and why would I do that? Well, because if you really want to know the answer, that's kind of right where it is. because this person likes to watch his Newsmax.
Well, if self, I mean, self-sufficient is
a relative term.
Yeah, we could, if we quit exporting, we could be self-sufficient. Well,
probably, maybe, yeah. Nah, yeah, maybe not.
Could be self-sufficient if we really turned up the drilling too.
Well,
there's enough of it.
There's
enough of it for like 70 years, 80
well,
years.
Well, my point being is that in Trump administration, we got to 11.1 or 2 million barrels a day. The Biden administration, we're over 13. And I think last week reached yet another new record high. Now, I'm not saying at all that Biden loves oil or the people around him love oil. It probably is the opposite. But somewhere along the line, you got to look at the facts before you have an opinion.
Everybody has their own facts, Chief.
Everybody has their own facts. And you don't ever want to... So I listened to this Newsmax for like 5 minutes. What in God's... You know, I never watched... Listen to CNBC. It's probably... Not, I listen to CNBC. I mean, MSNBC. I hear it's just as bad on the other side. So I hear this, I'll say person, I won't say moron, talking about the debate, and guess what he says? Something about the effect, we all know that Trump lies all the time, but they're very small, harmless lies. And now when Biden lies, it's a real big lie. So even though he doesn't lie near as much, it ends up being worse, because now the Trump lies are small and everybody knows they're a lie, so they don't bother anybody. And I'm sitting there going, you didn't really just say that, did you?
I think there's one. I don't know if I agree with it, but I think there's a large set of the population that does agree with that.
As my uncle used to say, if you like somebody, if you don't like somebody, they're nuts. If you do, they're eccentric. there's a lot of this going on here, isn't there? If you don't like the Democrats and Trump's your guy, you forgive everything around him, which is really kind of bizarre. I can't do that. I've been a Democrat my whole life. Now I'm not. I'm in the middle. I'm going to have to see who the hell the libertarian person is and vote for him, or else I'll write in Greg Pappas or Matt Byrne. I can't do that. I mean, I could...
No Mickey Mouse?
But everybody has their limit of what they can take in a person. I mean, when Hillary started taking trades in her account that weren't hers, in the business I'm in, that's an absolute no-no. I couldn't vote for that lady if she was an alderman or dog catcher. I don't care what the story is. I had my fill of Hillary Clinton.
Well, from 2:46 this morning, Tucker Carlson was tweeting that Obama's tweet supporting Joe Biden was disingenuous.
Well, whatever. my point is, everybody has to reach their limit on somebody where they're just too crooked to vote for. And I reached my limit on her. I'm not asking anybody else to feel the same way. I'm not asking anybody else to, you know, I don't like, I dislike the lady. There's a limit to what I want somebody that in the leader of the free world to have. Now, for Trump, he's
maybe
way...
Maybe they're not the leader.
Well, sure the hell they are. And but Trump is way beyond that for me. Now, for other people, he obviously isn't. But this moving game, no matter what the guy does, it's okay and it's somebody else's fault. Careful with that. You know, just careful with that. And same thing with Biden. I mean, Biden, I mean, I'm convinced my...
Ukraine thing is pretty interesting.
Well, sure. My view of Biden is that he was elected to Congress early on, and once he got in there, maybe because when his son got old enough, he started to see all the money flying around him, and he cashed in. Like a lot of the other people there, which is horrible to me, that's so... against my view of government. I like the Paul Simons of the world, came home, Adlai Stevenson, Everett Dirksen, Rosti, Dan Rostenkowski. Dan had a big pack, but he didn't have a lot of personal money. I mean, those are my...
I mean, Biden's pretty bad at it unless he's hiding it well.
He's got the houses and all the other stuff the son has.
Well, if you've been there for however many years, you should be a lot. Pelosi like made...
You know what when he started as a representative, you know what his salary probably was? $25,000.
Yeah, but... we know that that's not where the money is Congress.
Where is it?
Stock trading.
Those guys didn't trade. They didn't even know what stock was in those days.
Well,
nobody traded stock in the 80s. The market was 800, for God's sake.
If you're... Well, let's just talk about Nancy Pelosi in the past month. How much do we think Nancy Pelosi...
She's in this rarefied air. Now, you tell me.
Let's do one-tenth of...
Okay,
what all right, Nancy...
You're somewhat of a cynic.
I think if he was good at what he did.
All right, so how are we going to corral.
Nancy made $8.4 million this month.
How are we going to corral the people who get in there and their significant other? I can name two wives and one husband. Her husband and Phil Graham and who's the other guy? McConnell's wife. Making a fortune while they're in the Senate off their Senate stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying if Biden was good at being a grifter, he'd be worth probably $1 billion by now. He's been there, what, how long? Or he should be at least as what Nancy is, because she's been there the same amount of time, and they've had relatively, you know, star-studded careers or whatever. It's just one is...
Well, but I'm saying it's the spouse that's making all the dough. Now, if you're going to come out tomorrow and say, by the way, if someone becomes a senator or president,
if you're going to play the game, can't have a job. The game to win.
The wife can't have a job. What do you think that would do to the ladies of the world? You wouldn't get a vote. My question is, how much can your spouse take advantage of your situation? Does anybody think Wendi Graham would have been the head of and Ayn Rand's board if she wasn't married to that guy?
So it's Jill's fault that he's doesn't have a lot of money?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying is now we're having the spouses of the people in Congress making all the dough. Okay, now...
Well, whatever the game is, he's not good at it. I mean, he's president, but he got caught, or he...
Well, because his son is a loser. Everybody knows his son has been a druggie the whole way
through. Okay, but Nancy's got a weirdo husband, and...
What do you mean a weirdo husband? The guy owns a big tuna manufacturer in some place, in some island.
I don't know. He's had some incidents.
Well, yeah, he got back bashed in the head. That doesn't make him weird.
What was that guy there for?
I don't know, but he came in and he attacked the guy. Right? I mean, the guy a block from me got knifed the other night. Now, is that his fault?
I'm not trying to victim blame. But if you've been in Congress or Senate or whatever for 50 years, and you're that far, and you've had a better, arguably better career than Nancy Pelosi, you're not playing the real game
I think somewhere along the line, if you're there for a period of time, you see the amount of money that's available.
Yeah, but Hunter's like making like $2 million or something. Okay. Nancy made $8 million last month.
Doing what?
Trading.
How do you,
what she always does.
How do you know?
Because it's public.
How is her trading public?
Because they have to report what
they
do.
Don't.
Yeah, they do.
To who?
They've got like 40 days to report whatever trades they do.
So what were her trades?
I don't know, but they know her portfolio. There's people who follow their portfolios.
I mean, she's got a lot of money. Maybe she's just long awesome. of the seven stacks.
Yeah, she definitely is long a bunch
but
of NVIDIA.
But we're not talking about her walking out of a meeting like the lady down south who's married to the head of the, what, box exchange or something, who walked out of the COVID meeting and sold all her stuff.
Well, yeah, they do that every day.
I'm saying we don't know what Nancy did that last month. We can't pin a trade like that to her. You can't.
Why
can't.
Not?
Well, you're just
it's pretty obvious.
No, it's not.
Well, I guess we have a different definition of obvious.
Well, I'm saying she could have a portfolio that's up $8 million last month.
It is. She does.
Okay,
$8.4 million.
Well, what makes you think she even made a trade?
Because they have to disclose their trades.
Okay, she made $8 million. She has a portfolio. She's up $8 million. How do you know she even made a single trade? Or the stuff wasn't there from 2 years ago?
I could probably tell you her last couple of trades.
I'm saying if she acted
as... There's a ETF on Nancy.
But you can't... you unless you... Do we think she traded... I'm not a Nancy Pelosi fan at all. But do we think she traded on a specific piece of insider information? I don't know.
That's their M.O.
Oh. You don't know.
N-A-N-C.
You don't know.
That's what it's called.
I mean, it's whatever, but you don't know. I mean, but I think a lot of it's going on. And, but I think these people, they're not supposed to trade.
Yeah, they are.
No, when I was your age, they put their money in a blind trust when you came in. Nobody that I knew from Congress had any dough. Marty Russo, none of these guys had any money. You had two houses and you made $40,000 a year.
Yeah, I think the game has changed a little.
Yes, it has. Now, the question, in those days, the convention was, obviously it wasn't a rule because, what's his name, Cheney decided he's going to trade his own crap. it wasn't a rule, or certainly not enforced, one or the other. In those days, people...
Well, they made it a rule to where they could trade as long as they report it.
What I'm saying is, back in those days, you put your money, your investment money, in a blind trust. And now you don't.
That was just kind of a custom, though. It was never required.
It was honesty. Well, obviously, it was never required. I mean, people in the CBOE were not supposed to make crummy trades with people. It was a rule, but it also was a way to do business. You didn't want to do business that way. I mean, all this stuff is changing. I mean, I think Trump challenged a lot of stuff people thought were rules. Obviously, Cheney did the same thing. Obama maybe did, too. Now, this isn't really a rule. I'll just do whatever I damn well please. Well, okay. Cheney was trading, Kellogg, Brown, and Root the whole way, wasn't he?
I don't know. Cheney was...
A creature of whatever.
I think he kept all his Halliburton.
But they owned Kellogg, Brown, none of it was blind trust, as I'm talking about. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm out. We have an argumentative Greg Pappas in the studio, and we have Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 46. We have people tweeting in about which side's worse. I don't know which side's
Your
worse.
Your side's worse.
I'm in the middle. What side is the middle?
See, now we can't even pick sides.
No, we can't even pick sides, no. S&P futures up 12, Dow futures up 96. Over in Europe, John's going to have to explain to us what the hell's going on in France. It was, the second stage of the election. Mm-hmm. DAX up 64.4%. FTSE up 30.4%. The CAC Iran up 116. That's 1.5% as the conservatives did well in the first round. Conservatives good for markets? I don't know. We'll see. Over in Asia, the Nikkei up 47. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 2. Let's call that one flat. Still under 18,000. 17,718. Shanghai, however, a little bit of a bounce. Up 27, that's 9.9%, 29.95, almost made it back to 3,000. On Friday, Dow was down 45, S&P down 22, NASDAQ down 122. So we're trying to get some of that back today. We've got maybe 40% of it back so far. Bonds, 10-year up 7 basis points, 4.41. That's a big move, which is kind of interesting with the market up. A Bund up 8 basis points, 2.57. Japan up to 107, so way over 1 now. So they bounce all the way back up here. Oil up 51 cents, 82.05. It's the very, I'd say it's the top end of this range. Would you say, Greg, or are we going to break out here? Or is it just, every time it's been up this high, it's gone back down. We'll see if it does this time.
Selling the calls, buy the puts.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm not so sure it's not going to break out. Brent up 57 cents, 85.57. I didn't get the memo. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.56. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.52. Gold is up 6.30, 23.45. Silver up 3 cents, 29.59. Copper up 3 cents, 4.41. We have Bitcoin up 6.99, 62,618. And we have foreign exchange, which has actually been moving a little bit lately. The euro is a little stronger today at 107. The dollar's down a little bit. The yen is 161, so ouch on that. I mean, Japan's got to do something over there to raise rates or what they're going to do. A British pound is up 126.7, so that's actually down a little bit. The euro up a little bit, the pound down a little bit, and the yen down a little bit. There's a lot of stuff there, man. What do you got for us, Trevi Weathers Sports? Boy, the Cubs suck yesterday.
Yeah, no good for the Cubs. Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:38 on July 1st, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, we're looking at 63 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies with a light breeze, high of 71 degrees today. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, it's 86 degrees right now, cloudy skies, and a high of 106 degrees today. Over to sports, in the MLB yesterday, Cubs lose again to the Milwaukee Brewers 7-1, as well as that White Sox lose to Colorado Rockies 5-4. And Chief, I don't know if you caught that story of all those people who got caught on the escalator at the Brewers game. Pretty brutal there.
Well, if that thing it moves fast enough, that if you're not really hanging on to the railing and it's crowded and it stops suddenly, everybody's going to pitch down.
Yeah, a bunch of people went to the hospital.
See, that happened on a CBOE a few times.
Yikes.
Where one person is there and somebody would... In fact, somebody got their sandal caught in a damn thing and stopped it one day and people got hurt.
Yikes.
But it was only a few people on it. But no, they're dangerous if they stop all of a sudden.
Yeah. Beware of escalators.
There's the Ferris wheel that stopped, too.
Yeah, those are pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I want to say the WNBA, Chicago Sky, lost their game against the Minnesota Lynx, 70-62. Tonight in soccer, the Copa America tournament, USA plays Uruguay at 8 p.m. That's all I got, Chief. Thank you.
Nice. So, and all the Germans. So we're going to have Mr. Murphy on this week. You know, we're not here Thursday. We got to get Mr. Mike on. Actually, Mike, if he wants to, we could pile on today if he's listening. Talk about this Euro soccer, because it's my nephews and everybody are all up on that. Our German buddy is they watched the German guys at the Donk House a couple times, and I think we're overserved both times.
It's the only way.
It's the only way. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
You do indeed. Good
morning, John,
everybody.
Being our barrister, our attorney guy, how exactly would you coin a law in today's world where everybody's equal, right? Which I'm not saying we shouldn't be. How would you coin a law that if you get in Congress that somehow or another your wife is restricted in what she can do?
Okay, hold on. Before you guys, I found out how Dick Cheney kind of got around it. Halliburton gave him a bunch of severance payments. So he sold the stock and options, and he received severance payments, and then he put all those payments into a blind trust. So... That's okay. How you get around it. You just have the company pay you instead of in stock. They just give you cash before you leave.
Ah, okay. So, John, how would you say that if you were elected to the Senate that If you had a wife, she had to become like Pioneer Woman and get on TV and do recipes or something. Well, that would not fly with the ladies of the world, would it?
I think you'd see interest in elections decline precipitously.
Yeah, I mean, how do you stop the excessive graft? I'm not talking about campaign contributions. I'm not talking about something at some level. I mean, when people used to come to the CBOE, we'd have the big meeting in the morning. I say we, the people were invited. I was on the board, so I was invited. And somebody'd show up, left or right. In those days, you never even talked about it. They'd just be somebody from whatever party. They'd sit down, and I think you could give them, again, refresh my memory, is it 500 or 1,000 bucks, the most you give somebody? I think from a corporation at the time. They sat down, and it, you know, didn't even pay their airfare from Washington here, for God's sake. And the idea was you'd sit down, and they'd learn about your business. You'd ask them some questions. There'd be this back and forth that I think would be a very strong part of democracy. You're meeting people that you're friggin' representing, right? How do we get from that to somebody's wife or husband making zillions when somebody's in Congress?
It's like the old theory of marriages, Tom, where, you know, they were done to amass power, to, you know, create and reaffirm alliances, and, you know, to build power. And you look at the way that people in the political system in this country, and not just in this country, certainly, but the kind of marriage partners that, you know, are attracted to these people, and, you know, that sometimes it predates their political career, sometimes it happens after they become politically prominent. But it's the same sort of thing. It's like a feudal system that's applied to something that, you know, believes that feudalism is dead. But you've got all these, you know, quasi oligarchs, and you got, you know, legendary power families in you know, American political history, and it's become kind of comical now. If you look at people like Mitch McConnell or John Kerry, people like that, whose, you know, marriage partners are significantly connected, let's say.
What does Kerry's wife do? I don't know what she's doing.
Teresa Hines? She was John Hines' widow.
That's right.
The helicopter crash?
Yeah.
So, you know, no tag days for the Hineses. You know? So, but these are, you know, or FDR's, you know, son marrying one of the DuPont daughters. I mean, there's lots of strange kind
of. Well, they're not hanging out in the bowling alley, so they're not going to marry somebody from there.
Of course not. No, and this is because the political class in this country has inched ever upward in the you know, sort of restricted class of people with money and with tons of money and with incalculable amounts of money, and that dominates the political class now. Formerly it was never, you know, excluded. But I wouldn't say dominate.
You think young Greg remembers the line? What was it? The Cabots talk only to the lodges, and the lodges talk only to God.
Yeah.
Speaking of crossing that line, what's his name? Ricketts is now. Is he a senator?
Ricketts is. He's a governor.
Governor,
yeah, from Nebraska.
Yeah.
I think he's a senator now.
That may be true. Yeah.
Maybe true.
He's got a couple hundred million, right?
Yeah. Well. That's what paper overflow does for you.
Bingo.
Yeah. I guess as Mike Reichel family said, we'll ask Greg. We don't know, we're picking on Greg today. What is the motto of Chicago?
Bring it on. We're here to preserve disorder.
No.
Where's mine?
Well, that's what Mike Reichel says it should be. The actual motto is I will.
Yeah.
And Mike Reichel said it should be changed to where's mine? Which is makes probably sense. More accurate. I mean, I guess, you know, one thing I always try and, John, and, you know, as best I can, I like to hit all sides of these issues, because they are real issues and they're real people. Okay, they're not. I think that it's incredibly difficult to understand at every level. I mean, I manage money for a lot of people, and a lot of people have a lot of money, and I've managed some pretty big accounts. My brother and I. I mean, we're not talking billions of dollars, but I mean, they're you know, people got dough. Some people do, which is great, and they think we're the people to put it with, which is even better. But I don't have any necessarily concept. Chicago, I probably could get my hands on. I mean, I know how much, you know, I have a feeling how much my Pullman days, a contract on the Dan Ryan might be worth, or something like that, or you know, a sewer project. I could probably figure some of that out. When you start getting to Washington, I'm going to say, John, it's above my pay grade, but when you sit there and you go and you sit there and you're on a committee, you work your way up in the Senate or representatives, and you're an honest person, and you got two houses, and you're making, even now, you're making $250,000 a year, which everybody thinks is a fortune. Well, I got news for you. If you got a family here and a house in Washington, and you're flying back and forth, that's not a fortune. Duh. I mean, you can say what you want about it. It is, but it isn't. I mean, if you're straight, and you sit there, and every single time you put a bill together, 15 of these sleazy lobbyists come in wearing a suit worth more than your entire portfolio, and pinky rings and Rolex watches and everything, and they're putting all this crap together, and you're sitting there going, why do I keep giving it to these creeps, and I don't have a dime? Someplace, somewhere, you're going to say, you're going to be Mike Royko's guy. There's got to be something in this for me. I just gave this guy, you know, a $30 million contract, of which he's going to make 10. And I got, as my grandmother used to say, scata.
I know what that means.
Yeah. And it has to somewhat wear on you so much. It's to a certain extent, the money you're tossing around in the place, and if you're just constantly tossing it to other people and you can't even buy dinner in a Washington restaurant, it's going to start to wear on you. I mean, if Joe, which I don't know if he ever was, and of course everybody now thinks he's been a sleazebag since day one, if Joe actually was somewhat of an honest guy along the way, and all of a sudden after all those years he's got nothing, and somebody like his son says, do you realize how much money's running around here? Pop, what's the matter with you? How many people do you think chase our contribution to Nicaragua or Argentina, wherever this money goes? How many people chase the water treatment plant in Yemen or some damn place? The answer is a lot of people. And how do you stop that? I mean, how do you not get involved at all? I mean, I'm asking you because you're an honest man. I mean, I don't know where's the breaking point for most people.
I don't think there's much. Well, I mean, there is no oversight for this time other than press, other than investigative journalists who take an interest in this stuff. And you do it before an election, not after it. I mean, if you think that there's something, you know, sinister or suspicious about some connection between a political wannabe or a fat cat and some industry or some group or some international oligarchy or whatever, this is, you know, The way this is exposed and the way it's critiqued is through the press. Otherwise, there's probably going to be no, you know, criminal investigations. There's never going to be any kind of, you know, worry about this stuff if the people who can have, you know, earn their paychecks by making phone calls and asking questions and digging into records, which is what the press's responsibility is. There is absolutely no safeguards against, you know, a total abuse of the system, and we've long past the point at which the press gave a darn about any of this stuff. They're certainly not going to try to you know, be crusaders and end up someday on the wrong side of the political fence and find themselves now, you know, having to serve two masters, and they're going to serve the bigger master. And you know, it's not going to be about exposing anybody, but it's going to be about protecting.
But I mean, what if you were to write a column about everybody in Washington that is somehow profiting from a contract that they're on a committee? That's sick. You'd never stop writing.
Well, that's because we've let it become so ubiquitous. It was always like that. There was always, you know, a level at which people were untouchable. All of you go back and look at, you know, the Frank Capra movies in the 30s and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. The naivete of people who are up against, you know, a figure who's, you know, worshipped and idolized, and you realize it's all just, you know, somebody who's got clay feet, and you know, how could this happen? We're so far past that.
But the mentality
for a long time.
I mean, I know I'm skipping back and forth from different places, but let's take the city of Chicago. Alderman used to make nothing, right?
As a part-time job.
Right, well, the alderman made
still
pretty much.
Was a part-time job.
Well, it still is, even though you get a pension and everything else.
Yeah.
When we define part-time in Chicago, It doesn't mean like you're not supposed to spend a lot of time at it. What it means is you can have another job. You can be a lawyer that represents people like against the city and be an alderman at the same time. What's his name? Durkin, who was all over the TV on Fox. I think he was on Fox. Might not have been. The night of the debate. He used to be the head Republican guy in the Illinois Senate, right, Jack? Right. I went to a benefit for him one night, a political thing, and I told the story, and the, let you say, exceptionally easily on the eyes, amazingly well-dressed young lady who happened to be getting a drink right next to me, who was a lobbyist for Commonwealth Edison. She was there. They were paying the dough. She had a friend of hers there. She went there by herself. There were two of them. The other one was equally as well-dressed and attractive. And when Durkin came by and said hello, we introduced each other. He probably wondered, who the hell is this guy? He gives me his card, and the card was for Durkin Law Firm. It had nothing to do with him being a senator. Now the thing that we used to have this discussion one day. I wish I could have taped stuff in those days. George Stigler, who was a political economist and ended up winning a Nobel Prize, well deserved. At the time, Alderman made like nothing, and Mayor Daley, Richard J., was making, what do you think, John, $45,000 a year, something like that,
probably under 50, I bet.
And Stigler was saying, we've got this conundrum. He says the conundrum is you can't pay the alderman any money because you think he's stealing. But then you're pissed at him for stealing. He goes, it's one or the other. And the question from the rabble, meaning the students, it wasn't me, could you possibly stop corruption? He goes, I can stop it in a second. And somebody said, well, how would you do that? He goes, well, I would pay the mayor, since he has more employees and a bigger budget than virtually any company, and they're all making $700,000 or something at that time, and he's making $45,000. He said, I would pay the mayor $3 million a year. But I wouldn't pay him. He'd get a stipend of $200,000, and the rest would go into escrow. And every year that he's not convicted or did something...
Convicted.
Every year that he was not shown to have done anything untoward during his time, he would get a piece of the escrow. And if he was ever found to have been on the take or anything... by any court or whatever, then he forfeits the rest of the money. Because I can do it in a second. He goes, why should the mayor make a tenth of what the guy makes who runs General Motors? When Chicago at that time was a vibrant 3 million person town. I mean, why should a senator, which is a serious job, why should a senator make a tenth of what the guy sitting on a bench for the Bulls makes? I mean, why can't a senator make $3 million a year with this budget we have, $5 million a year, and by the way, we'll give you half of that, or we'll give you a quarter of that, and the rest of it gets paid over life if you were turned out to be a straight arrow. And why do we continue to pay these people a ridiculous price, considering what we're asking them to do, two houses, a family, back and forth, and run campaigns, and pay them a ridiculous amount of what they actually are there, then we expect them to be straight. What is the mentality there, John?
Well, I think it arises from the feeling that this doesn't require a very big skill set to be an alderman.
But to be a senator? And, to do it right?
Well, but the thinking, the idea that you would track people who, somehow have to amass a fortune in order to be elected at all. I mean, forget about what kind of salary they get, but to even have the job, if you want to be a judge in the circuit court system, the wealth you have to have in order to spread it around and get preferential treatment to be slated as the party candidate or anything else has nothing to do with your performance yet, because you haven't even gotten the job. But it presumes you've already got funding sources that are not going to go away, if you get elected, and the friendships that you have and the business, connections you had before you got there probably have a lot to do why you're even in the running for this job. And it's even worse, more amplified on the national level. So anybody who's got the power to be on a ballot somewhere for a job, regardless of what it pays, has already become such an insider that the salary doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
Well, I mean, so. But that's, well, stay on theme here, which you are, by the way. How does part of it is the investment to get yourself your name out there for the next election, I think. I mean, Junilius is that way. But the one that comes to mind, and I forget her name, Greg should know because he's Greek. Who was the lady who ran for Water Reclamation District? She's Greek. This is maybe three elections ago. That when I was working for Nancy Sheehan.
Oh, Stereopolis?
Yeah, when I was working for Nancy Sheehan, who had that job when she was running for treasurer, I'm going to say the job paid. Now, talk about a political walk-up job. Totally part-time. I think she made, Janice was, God, she's dead, so is Dawn Clark Netsch, that she ran against. Well, no, Dawn Clark Netsch ran for governor. They're all dead for a while. I'm going to say she was making $25,000 a year. But now you get an office. At the time, you got phone, okay, and you got an assistant, essentially to be able to use your phone and your office and your assistant for political advancement. I mean, I guess you went to the meetings. I mean, she did all that stuff, read the stuff. She did a nice, you know, whatever a nice job is, but she did what she was supposed to do. She didn't just do nothing. Nice lady. So now this Greek lady who ran, and you know the name, but I can't pronounce it. Some money in the, I'm going to say, Greg, the Greek mafia, put up a bunch of dough for her, and I say that, a lot of backers, and she had two or three massive billboards on the expressways coming into the city and going out. Now those things, Greg, what do you think those cost? I have no idea, but I don't think they're cheap. A big, huge billboard on like the Stevenson or something. I'm going to say the job at that point was up to $45,000 or $50,000, maybe. And I'm going to say whoever was behind her spent $400,000 or something to get her in, maybe more. Now what investment is that? Unless the person is somebody expecting a contract from the Water Reclamation District, which I guess could happen, it's somebody who's betting on her to be state senator something one of these days, right? Once her name is out there.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what the bet is on that.
You're buying early.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, one of our friends, you guys obviously know.
You think that contribution would have been there if it was water reclamation or anything?
Just to get her name out there. Well, when Vallis was running,
and those are stepping stone positions,
yes.
As all aldermen, you know, has traditionally been considered too. Although there's not enough higher up jobs to go around for all the aldermen Chicago has, or alder persons, whatever the preferred term is. But water reclamation has definitely been seen as a way to work yourself into county government and network, and you know, get a shot at the county board seat or get a job at, you know, something even, you know, more glorious than that. So,
anytime your name gets out there on any kind of a reasonable stage, your name sticks.
What do we think the odds are of Pritzker? What do we think the odds are of Pritzker running for president?
I'm going to say, I think it's going to be either him or, if Biden steps out, it's going to be either him or the guy from California.
So you're good, yeah.
Who was on the show Friday was saying
I think that comes down to
who's
money
the lady
too.
Who's the Commerce Secretary, John? She's been a senator, she's been a governor, what's her name? We're trying to think of people who...
What's her name? Raimondo?
Yeah, I think we're talking about people, if Biden says, I'm out, you know, who's in? And if everybody keeps talking about the guy from California, I'd take Pritzker over him. But then everybody says this camera... doesn't seem to be any... on either side, Jen. Let's just say both guys drop out. There's not like an anointed senator anywhere, is there? There's not a Dan Inouye, there's not an Everett Dirksen, there's not... anybody in the Senate who's really thought of that high, is there?
No. It's a very shallow talent pool on both sides of the aisle. By talent pool, I mean people who, you know, have the drive and the energy and the name recognition and the record that makes them even a serious candidate for president.
Oh, the state of Illinois is saving $177,000 on J.B. Pritzker's salary. He's not taking a salary.
What was the guy from...
spent $171 million.
Who's the guy from Florida that Trump said had the small hands and you know what he really meant?
DeSantis?
No, the little guy. He ran
Marco
with
Rubio.
Rubio. And who's the? I mean, who else is that? I thinking about the guy who was Speaker of the House and quit. The guy from Wisconsin. Is he Nowersville now?
Paul Ryan.
He's
Paul Ryan. We got
him.
He's
on
the school board or something. What is he doing?
He's
a local school council in Chicago.
God,
isn't that the guy who's a lobbyist or something?
Isn't that the guy who never even had an apartment out there? He slept in his office and went down to the health club and shower up. The guy was Speaker of the House. Wasn't that his shtick? He didn't spend a dime out there.
Yeah, he's a classic case, really. Somebody who, you know, from college, he got a job as a driver for some politician, and you know, never worked what I really call an honest job after that.
Well, what do you think? I mean, all these people. It's you know, my friend down the block. I'll just call him Attorney Bill. His daughters are really great. He's got three daughters, terrific. One of them is she's got more athletic letters at Loyola than anybody else. She had basketball 4 years, volleyball like 3 years, and softball something along those lines. I mean, terrific athlete. And they won a state championship or something. Anyway, her daughters are great. Her family's terrific. I mean, most of my best friends. And the daughters ended up going to, one went to Providence, and I think the other ones went to Fordham? Maybe? Fordham, for those that don't, I think, John, Fordham, and you can kick me from a distance. Bill says that Fordham, it's a small little law school. If you graduate Fordham Law School, more people from Fordham on a percentage basis work as senatorial aides or Supreme Court aides than like any other school, even Harvard. You think that's true?
I believe that.
So his daughters or a couple of them worked in Congress. There's a lot of people who go right from law school, even while they're in there. They might be a something during the summer. I don't know, what do you do during the summer when Congress is out? But there's people that actually have, summer jobs in Congress when everybody's home. And it's kind of weird, but a lot of people have them.
You work in their household, I think. You know, you're a gopher. You do social scheduling. You do tutoring for the kids. Who knows? But these are like apprenticeships that you're going to ripen into, you know. Journeyman positions.
But if we had one of his daughters on, she could probably name us 50 people that had never had a job except just doing that and work your way up the chain. The guy from Supreme Court Justice was that way. The guy who just got on, the guy they have the big problem with, Gorsuch, what's his name? The guy that they Democrats gave a bunch of heat to.
Kavanaugh.
Yeah, he was one of those guys. You know who else one of those guys? Was he Democrat or Republican? The guy who was the Secretary of Treasury. He was head of the Secretary of Treasury. Was he head of the?
Geithner.
Yeah, Geithner was one of those guys too, right? Every time he bleeped up in school, his old man got him a job as like a Supreme Court clerk or something to straighten him out. I mean, he lived
always kind of lived in some sort of a bubble.
Those guys. I mean, there's a lot of people like that. S&P Futures up 4. We're not one of them, though, unfortunately. S&P Futures up. I just got a picture here. I showed Greg. Why did Mickey Mantle become so strong? And then they show him working at some mining company before he was in baseball, and how he had to work there during the summer or in the winter because they didn't make enough money playing baseball. S&P Futures up 15. Nasdaq Futures up 59. So instead of working out with some weights, he's lifting stuff in the mines all day. That's how you become strong. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Patricia, the reason you didn't know where I was for the last 20 years, because you were strung out on crack. Now you have admitted to that.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Matt Byrne on the board. Anybody can be strung out for 20 years and miss 20 years. Matt,
it's
easy.
An easy one.
Easy to do. You get 20 years. What's he leave 20 years? Went back to our reunion. I think some of our guys missed out on 50 years, but that's another.
Yikes. Was it one of those acid flashbacks?
Tell you what, you know, there was a lot of that when we were in school.
Man.
There was no money drugs. There was no cocaine. There was no heroin. There was nothing like that. But acid was about.
Just psychedelic stuff to expand your mind.
Oh,
yeah.
There was acid there. John, you can weigh in on this, not that you were any part of a participant. Mescaline, quercetin, the whole, I don't know what those things even do for you now, but what's the one now that they say is actually good for you? Is it mescaline or?
They're saying ayahuasca, which I think, it has something in it, something in mushrooms in it.
Oh, my guys were never into mushrooms, but boy, there were guys in the OEX pit that their entire freezer was just mushrooms. Our guys never did any mushrooms, did they, John?
Oh, yes, they did.
I guess I was not a prize to that. I remember going to a couple of when I went even on this subject. I do remember Matt got us going this way. I do remember going to a couple of off-campus parties where they had a Lazy Susan out there, and every one of the little things was a different pill. It was uppers, downers, and I don't know what the other ones were. But I didn't want to know. But I do remember the guy who invented the supercharger, or he thinks he did. Who was that? Who was that moron? Was it somebody off campus that we all knew? You know what a supercharger is, man? Or at least what this guy thought it was?
No, I don't know.
I think he was taking chemistry or something. So he gets his big test tube, right? And he etches a little hole in the top of the thing.
Mm.
Where you could plunk the J in the hole, right?
Yeah.
So then you put your hand over the end, and basically suck on the thing, and you take the entire J into the tube, and then pull your hand off the end, so you'd pull the entire whole J in one.
So it's kind of like an incense burner.
Yeah, and I'm like, these guys are, they use any of this creativity towards anything else, we'd probably solve the world's problems.
Wow. Yeah, cancer would have been cured years ago.
Oh yeah,
if we applied the same amount of time and energy.
Anyway, but there was never any money involved. There was none of. You know, nobody ever owed anybody 10 grand or anything like that. It was just, you know, at least that I know of. John knew more people than me, so if you want to opine, John, or else we'll change the subject.
Yeah, I didn't know anything at that high a level.
No.
I think there's definitely an active drug market in South Bend.
Oh yeah.
And surrounding areas too. So as there was everywhere else, but it was pretty low key stuff by comparison to today. You know. It wasn't like you had the cartels and the news or anything like that.
Well, Jan, we were talking this weekend with some people a little bit in terms of crime and punishment, and it's stunning to me. Kevin was even saying it last week. You can't stop this, you can't stop that. And my attitude is, I wouldn't want to do the things you would need to do to quote stop it. But the idea that you can't, sure you can. Other countries do. I mean, you don't see people with guns in Australia. They made a decision. We're getting rid of guns, and they did. By the way, if you have one, you're like, we're not going to see it for like a really long time. I mean, if you decided to go into one of these neighborhoods where the guys in the orange windbreaker in the middle of the street is selling drugs, the idea is if you arrest him, there'll be another guy. I don't disagree with that. But if you arrest the first guy and you bring him to a new facility and nobody sees him for 2 weeks and the second guy is there, and pretty soon 50 guys are there, even the dumbest among us will realize, I don't really want to be the 51st guy. I don't even know where these people are. You would eventually get the message through, wouldn't you?
Of course. And, you know, the 31st Street beach incidents in Chicago are a pretty good example of, I think, how not to, you know, treat these kinds of episodes. But there's another incident, I think it was the night before last, wasn't
yep.
it? You know, stabbing or shooting? And
a 26-year-old lady starts arguing with a 17-year-old lady. So the 26-year-old lady, you know, we're not talking about wearing bathing suits here, I guess. The 26-year-old lady pulls out a knife, stabs the 17-year-old lady. She pulls out a gun and shoots the 26-year-old lady. So we're on the beach, armed to the teeth, having an argument. Where could that go wrong? And this is, what, an hour and a half after the park is supposed to be closed. I mean, does anybody think that there's any problem here? Just saying.
The irony, too, Tom, I mean, what the city spent in redeveloping that part of the lakefront and the overpasses, you know, pedestrian
and the yacht
bridges.
Club. There's a yacht club down there, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is you know, and the idea was this would be a welcome, you know, addition to what the Northsiders had seemed to, you know, always have had. But they haven't had it always, but it was to extend the kind of amenities and, you know, boat, you know, facilities and harbor, you know, facilities. This just is now turned into just a magnet for it seems like uncontrollable, you know, crowds or mob activity. And as you said, the police don't want to go in and break up a, you know, potential melee when there's, you know, a thousand people on the beach at 3 a.m. You know, what are they doing there? But you don't want people doing that or stealing it. It's okay to do that. And now, you know, the alderman has called for closure of the beach, which seems to be reasonable if it's being abused.
Well, okay, the alderman has called for closure of the beach. Now, if there's 300 people there at 2 a.m, we know if we're going to do this, what has to happen. You're going to show up with 15 buses and 500 policemen, and you're going to ring the place, and everybody's going to get on a bus, and it's going to go somewhere, and you're going to interview them and find out, what are you doing? Do you have a home? How old are you? Is this a curfew violation? And by the way, are you armed? Are we going to search you? Yes, we are. I mean, I don't want that kind of a police state, but we're at the point where it's almost what you have to do, but I don't want to do it, Dan. I mean, to say it, you can't do it, you certainly can. I mean, you know, if you want to, whatever, it's Saudi Arabia, if you steal twice, they cut your hand off. I don't want to do that to anybody or whatever it is. But the fact
is, there's been this rejection, Tom, of mass arrests for any kind of, you know, public event when things get out of hand. The police have just declined to do that. And unfortunately, it arises from the fact that mass arrests in the past were used for things like the anti-war demonstrations around the time of the Iraq War and, you know, the incursion into Afghanistan. And that's when the police were arresting people en masse in Chicago for protesting that. They weren't being violent. They weren't stabbing each other or shooting each other.
Well, I'm saying this 31st Street thing has become enough of a deal now. You can put a huge sign up and said, by the way, if you're here tomorrow night, past 11:30, we'll give you a half hour to get out of here, you're going to get arrested. And if somebody challenged, I'm not advocating it. I'm just saying to the arguers that say you're helpless against this sort of thing, no, you're not. The question is, what are you prepared to do, as Sean Connery said in The Untouchables? What are you prepared to do? And right now the answer is, with the current administration, the answer is nothing. And the rest of the people are getting really tired of it, or they're leaving, or they're worried about it. I'm very worried about a guy getting home invaded and stabbed a block from my house and getting arrested in front of my place. Yeah, I got a problem with that. How can I say that couldn't have been me? Sure, it could have. I mean, I have a problem with it. You know?
Have you seen the signs in San Francisco, Tom? Say, stolen goods must not exceed $950.
God.
I guess if you give them free calculators, you know, they can absolutely make sure that they haven't stolen more than $950 worth of stuff. That would be a plus somehow.
But it's not just here. Our buddy Robert was in South Africa. I think he might have. They had some kind of a big seminar, world seminar, because he works with all the people. He's a money guy. Works for the Fed, and if there is talk about international settlements or something, and how this stuff clears country to country, and Robert's a genius on this stuff. So he's in South Africa, and he's got wherever the convention center is. It's three blocks from his hotel. He gets there, and he takes a cab over in the morning. He says it's a nice day. He walks to the hotel, and at dinner that night, the guy goes, "You did what?" He says, "I just walked to my hotel." He says, "You're out of your mind. The crime, you're surprised somebody didn't stop in a car and come out and rob your ass and beat you up." Well, how does a country that is trying to get people from all over the world to come to a place like that, how do you not combat that? I mean, why is it that these people, is it paying people? I can't believe that people, there's always going to be some element of people who don't want to live by the rules like everybody else, John. But someday, somewhere, you got to have a squad car on the Stevenson when there's 15 people going 100 miles an hour on a shoulder. You can't just ignore it. I mean, and any kind of rule implies, and all you do is make everybody else feel if you're not cheating, you're not trying. I mean, somewhere, someplace, we have to find a way to tell people this is the way we're going to behave, or else. And I don't want to do it. I wouldn't want that job. But I know. I mean, one of these days, if it gets worse and worse and worse, I guess I'm out of here too. We know a guy whose wife got killed on the Ryan, right? And yeah. Kim Fox didn't even arrest the person that was collateral damage. They weren't shooting at her. I mean, really? I mean, where are we going with this? I mean, same thing as on congressional people. You're stealing everything. Well, how can I allow you or expect you even in any sort of a representative election? You get $500,000 from some company. How can I expect you to represent me in committee when that company's lobbyist shows up and wants their stuff in a bill? How do you represent me when they're the ones that gave you the dough? I mean, we need to sit down and as a country, which is impossible now because all we do is fight, sit down and say, how are we going to do this? Because you know what, John? I think, and I don't think you'll disagree with this, look around the rest of the world. The United States goes down. What do you think the world's going to look like? It's going to look like something from the Middle Ages. Russia,
well,
China.
Going down, Tom.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, I know that, but if it's allowed to go all the way down, who's going to be, and any of the people saying, well, we shouldn't worry about the Far East, we shouldn't worry about, what do you suppose Europe or the Philippines or Malaysia or any of those people look like if we're not here? Is it a two-person world, China and Russia?
Well, I think that's the goal of the World Economic Forum, Tom, is to unify everybody into a third world living standard.
With a few people with all the dough?
That's a cheap way to run things. I mean, it's got your corruption and everything else that has to be figured in, but the idea is that you reduce people's appetites for, the good life. You make it look as if it's completely unattainable for people who formerly thought they were entitled to it somehow, and you make everybody struggle and fight each other for whatever crumbs they deign to throw at you. You end up giving everybody a guaranteed annual income and expect them to be happy. This is where we're headed.
Well, that's where Rome went.
So the idea is to make the USA, which is a kind of counterexample to this, make it part of this downward path. And speed it up, if anything, to get it out of the way faster. To me, it's pretty clear where we, fit into all of this.
Are you talking about the USA? You talking about Rome?
USA.
Rome is the same thing, right?
It's forces within and without that, want this so-called inequity to be leveled out to an extent where everybody is equally mongrelized and infuriated with each other, and you get fighting tribe, where nobody's got any money greater than anybody else, and nobody has any more power than anybody else, and you look to the people to higher up who've scarfed up everything, and you take what they're willing to give you. This is where we're headed. We're well along that way in this country now.
So we're going to have 50 mega yachts and no bass boats.
Yeah, that's desirable.
It's kind of where we're going, yeah. The only problem with that is it's desirable if you're on one side, not necessarily the other.
Of course.
Or...
How else can you explain, Tom, you know, the border policy? It's, to me, it's the same thing as watching people fly by you at 100 miles an hour on I-94, and you shake your head, and how does that happen? Who would want that to happen? But you look at what's happening in our border policy, and it's the same cluelessness at some level. Nobody could really make a argument that this is the way you want it, everybody to be disdainful of any kind of boundaries or rules or honest practices or anything else. But we've glorified it. We've made that the way it seems it has to be, and everybody has to accept it, and there's nothing you can do about it, so just shut up and get on with your meager lives.
Jen, you're never going to get me to disagree. They have a million people, or whatever the number is, swimming across the river here is a good way to do things. You're never going to, but as you know, I always try and I don't want to be one of these people that said you can't arrest the guy because education is the problem when he just killed somebody. I don't want to go down that road, but somehow, some way, the policy has to be, I won't say expanded, but criticized. I think the border thing is a symptom of what you just said is going around the world. I mean, we didn't cause Venezuela's problems. We didn't cause 50 million people not being able to live in a place. I mean, the amount of it's one thing to say we don't want anybody moving into the U.S. like some of our friends want to be. We don't want one person. It's quite another to say, well, geez, there's like, what's the number now? 8 or 10 million people that have scattered from their homes and had to go somewhere else because of, I mean, the world is afoot, literally, because of all this crap that's going on. And for us to say, even though we might have caused some of it in Syria and Iraq, we're not taking anybody. I mean, I'm not going to go from there to saying we should take everybody. You know that. I mean, you know me better than that. But the point is, this is an immensely huge problem. And the people swimming across the river is just, I'm going to say, a somewhat small piece of it. It's not a small piece of it to us, but worldwide. I mean, how much money have we given Venezuela, not Costa Rica so much, but some of these other places, Nicaragua, and only to have these people can't wait to get out of there? We've been giving them money for 100 years or 50 years. I mean, who took the dough? What are we giving it to the wrong people? Or what are we doing? You and I would have to spend, we'd have to get some of the people on the show and a bunch of the listeners. It would be a 4-week seminar at Camp David, learning about this and trying to figure out how the hell we can solve this thing on 100 different fronts and not just put up a fence in the middle of a river. And that's a small piece of it, right?
Well, before we put up a fence, we've got to figure out what we want inside the fence.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's
yeah.
How would you feel if you were the president of Jordan, for God's sake? Half his population is refugees, right? And somehow he's making it work. I'm not saying I want to be Jordan, but I mean, how that poor guy is any? How do they even function over there with all his people? And somehow he's making it happen, isn't he? I'm sure he's not happy, but.
Well, it's a monarchy for one thing.
Oh, God. Well, we got one guy who wants this to be a monarchy.
Yeah.
But I'm saying these issues, they are so big. And yet, you listen to that debate, these two guys are going to take the U.S. to the promised land? John, we're not even... I would want one of those guys managing money for me.
It's about who can keep us from going off the cliff for a longer period of time. Forget about the city on the shining hill.
These are massive issues. Our debt load is massive issues. Are we being? I mean, if this was the world was a good place, if it was Kennedy running against Nixon, who actually were friends, by the way, people don't think that, but they were. Those two guys in the middle of the campaign would be able to sit down and say, okay, one of us is going to win, but look at this crap that's happening. Do we agree on foreign policy to the point where we could put out a paper between us and say whichever one wins this is what you're dealing with. We're not going to let this happen. We're not going to let that one happen. Here's our policy. We should be able to do that no matter who wins, right? Our foreign policy should not change to a massive extent like that, should it?
No. But, Tommy, go back to Kennedy, for just a minute. I think one of the things that made Kennedy unpopular at certain levels, the intelligence community or the military community, the test ban treaty, and I guess nuclear testing, which they signed with the Soviet Union in, was it May of 63? It's only like 5 months before Kennedy was killed. And I think that was, of course, seen by any thinking person as a smart, compassionate, humane, politically savvy thing to do, to stop people so concerned about the environment today. Nuclear testing was the norm for too many years, and the treaty put a stop to that. But there were people in this country and elsewhere who reviled Kennedy for doing that, and there were important people too. And you still get that kind of crazy split between the maniacs and the halfway normal people, and sometimes the maniacs seem to be in control.
Well, there were people that had Russia as a serious enemy in any negotiation. I'm sure a boatload of people didn't like SALT 1.
Oh, yeah.
And, the weird part about
Reagan, with all his drum beating with Star Wars and all this missile shield and all this stuff, and kind of talking, trash talk in an arms race kind of climate that put off a lot of people. And later he was credited with bankrupting the Soviet Union, but ultimately bankrupted us too.
I think we were, I would trace our bankruptcy, our lack of money back to the Iraq War.
I want the case to be heard in the Northern District of Illinois, Eastern Division, Tom.
I would trace our problems back to Bush putting the Iraq War on a credit card.
Yep.
That too, it was 68 going off the gold standard. But you know what's funny is how history loves certain people, and I think to a large extent, Eisenhower was a great American, right? And he was a very popular president. If you think you hear the word Bay of Pigs or the phrase, an immediate dislike for Kennedy pops up that he didn't support these people. That thing always planned under Eisenhower, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard his name associated with it at all?
No. But you take the Dulles brothers, that crowd, they served under both Eisenhower and Kennedy. That's the administrative state in a nutshell to me. You got two crazy brothers running the show.
Well, we're gonna get Nance here in a second, and I think when I came home last night, because we had a power outage, my computer didn't work, so I was not able to do the research on the tax increases.
Did you get power restored, Tom, by the way?
Yeah, but not to the computer. It must have blown my modem.
Oh.
Yeah. So I got that guy coming. Good Lord. The modern world. Anyway, for those that don't, have no way of knowing, he's coming with tax bills here in the Cook County and in Illinois. And the areas that are up the most are the south suburbs, which are now the poorest areas. Buddy was telling me she was selling a house. Park Forest was up, 30%? They're leading it?
Oh, yeah. It's just...
But I'll let you and Nancy talk about this, but Buddy was helping somebody sell a house out there. And I think, John, the house went for 50. It was on this kind of horrible block. It looked like rural Mississippi. I think the taxes were 6. Or 10% of the price of the house or something. Because they had some big commercial... development out, it was a Lincoln Mall or somebody closed, they just passed them all around.
Yep.
But before we go to Nance, quick question, and this one is going to be here for the ages. Why does every president that comes into office looks at the untold part of the Kennedy assassination, immediately puts it somewhere hiding for another 4 years? Whose name is on there? Is it Dulles?
Well,
it's somebody's. Somebody's in there, so there's got to be something where these guys never release it.
And they, and they're still controlling things, Tom. That's the thing. I mean, whose ever name it is, or names, and I think people would be shocked at what's up, who some of these people are, because the names are still with us, the families are still with us, but it's a, you know, a huge network of people that are powerful enough to keep their names from being spoken.
It's 60 years later, and they even when everybody thinks about Trump as this huge, you know, rabble rouser, can do whatever he wants, and he's going to shake the place up. He didn't let it out, did he? They control him too.
It's like the third secret of Fatima, Todd.
Yeah.
There's been explanations of what really is in that you know statement by Lucia, the woman who had the apparition, and explanations that are favorable to various popes. But the real story, I think, is too horrible for anybody.
It's got to be LBJ or Dulles or both.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, I won't mention the names on the air, but I'll go a lot further.
Yeah, S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 53. Didn't Bobby Kennedy call LBJ up and say, "Why'd you kill my brother?"
Yeah.
Hey, well, on that fine note, we'll go to break. We'll come right
Jackie
back with...
Kennedy's mother refused to be in the same room with LBJ because he killed my son-in-law.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks on this fine note on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Support the Stocks and Jocks team. Hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
Wrong answer, no.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 54. We have Mr. John Flanning. We should have Nancy Long Graham on in a minute as well to talk about a really incredible story. Dow futures up 77. We've been up all morning. We came up last night, and we're still up. Europe up some. DAX up 83.5%. FTSE up 26.3%. CAC around up 1.5%. Our friend Mike Murphy lived over in Germany for a long time. He's probably the closest we know to this French situation. If he wants to come on someday this week and explain this, so they actually have a three-tiered election process. So even though the conservatives appeared to have won big yesterday, it doesn't mean that those people actually get elected. It means they all got slated. It's something weird. Maybe Mike can help us with that. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 47.1%. Hang Seng up 2%. Call that flat. Shanghai actually up almost 1%, 27%. Trying to get back to 3,029.94. as the Chinese markets have been really getting rattled. On Friday, Dow was down 45, S&P down 22, NASDAQ down 126, and we're back 40% of that now, 35 to 40% of that bonds. This is a pretty move, though, up 10 basis points, 4.45, so I'm wondering how far the market can go here with this kind of move in the bonds. But a bond up another 10 basis points, 2.53, so that's a big move for those guys. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.07. Oil up 50 cents, 82.04, scraping the top of this recent range. We'll see if we break out, hopefully not. Brent up 58 cents, 85.58. Natural gas down 5 cents, 2.55. We've got gold up 5.70, 23.45. Silver up 4 cents, 29.60. Silver had a pretty good rally on Friday. See if it can be 2 days in a row. Copper up 3 cents, 4.41. We have Bitcoin up 8.24 now, 1.3%, 62,743. And we have the U.S. dollar down a little bit as the euro is up to 107.4. British pound up to almost back to 127. And the Japanese yen is actually down. It's up to 161.24. So Japan continues to have problems with their currency in relation to everybody else. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:37 here in Chicago. The date is July 1st, 2024. Let's get you into the weather. Currently 67 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies with a light breeze, high of 71 degrees today. Down in Phoenix, 85 degrees right now, cloudy skies and a high of 106. Over to sports in the MLB yesterday, Cubs lose to Milwaukee Brewers 7-1, and White Sox lose to Colorado Rockies 5-4. Tonight in soccer, a Copa America tournament, USA plays Uruguay at 8 p.m., as well as that Bolivia plays Panama at the same time. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Nancy?
We do indeed.
Yes, you do.
Nance, how are you? I'm
good. How are you?
Doing all right. Had a nice weekend. Pretty nice. Although when I got home last night after having a power outage, get a load of this. We don't need to talk about this for more than about 30 seconds. I get the text from my guy upstairs that the power is sort of out, sort of not, half working, half not working. I'm like, wait a minute, it's either off or it's on. So that's okay. Then he texts me again. It's like midnight. It's back on. Okay, everything's fine. Even though we had a power outage, 38 buildings, of which we were one. That's nice to be selected, isn't it? So all of a sudden, 1:30, the phone rings. It's the girl downstairs. By the way, there's no power. I stumbled coming down the steps. Well, you know, do you have a flashlight? I think she must have one on her phone, but anyway. So the power comes back on at 2:20. So, of course, yesterday I get home and the computer, one of the routers is blown. It must have been from the power surge or something. So just another day in the ballpark, right? You know. Hey, but I wanted to mention, we got all kinds of other stuff to talk about. We're always with you and Jen. What is going on with these tax bills? I'll just read this thing. This is from WDTW. The median homeowners of Cook County South and Southwest suburbs saw their property tax bill rise nearly 20% this year, according to Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas. Largest percentage increase in 30 years. 15 suburbs, of which all but two towns are home to a majority of black residents. The increase were even bigger. Residential property taxes soaring at least 30%, according to new analysis. Two of those towns, Dixmoor and Phoenix, which have to be two of the poorest areas in the entire state, the median tax bill more than doubled. How the hell, where the houses are worth 60 grand, can the median tax bill be over 6 grand, Nance? What is with these people?
You know what? I just hit a customer call on that their tax bill went up. And they don't know if they can afford to stay where they're at. And I was told that they're going to send out corrected tax bills now. But I don't know if these tax bills that went are real or not real, because the people got charged more than their, you know, the first bill is 55%, the second bill is the remainder. These people are paying more than what they paid on the first tax bill. So it's really quite spooky. I have no idea what is going on.
How does somebody with a house that's worth 50 grand pay 6,500 in taxes?
I don't know. That's been going on like in Richardson Park and places like that for a while. So I'm not sure Country Club Hills are all getting these huge, huge tax bills.
Jen, is there any, you guys thought, is there any, I mean, these places, how can I be politically correct here?
They can't afford it.
Yes, they look like rural Mississippi. some of these suburbs, and nobody down there has a $6,500 tax bill, do they?
No, but I don't know what they're going to do. I think the sad part of this whole thing is no one knew it was coming. B, these people cannot absorb a hit like that. So I don't know what happened that no one knew this was coming. That's the surprise for me. Usually, you know, somebody's going to get an increase, right? You know that you're being reassessed, whatever. And these people just don't seem to have any warning whatsoever. And they really can't afford it when you're basically living hand to mouth as it is. Like, I think somebody's tax bill went from 4 to 8.
Well, didn't Audrey, I mean, you remember the three flat that Audrey, the guy wanted to buy? Somebody remodeled it, and it was really nice. It was in a, you know, yes, not the greatest area, but the guy did a beautiful job on this place. It was going to go for like $110,000, and the taxes were going to be 12.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We know about some areas that have been putting up with this for a while now. I mean, I understand there are some, but now it really went kind of widespread on this one, and from what I am understanding, and I have absolutely no idea what is going on here.
Jen, care to comment?
Do not get it.
You know, the lack of commercial assessed property in the south suburbs has really turned into a nightmare, especially, you know, at the other end of the socioeconomic level, like in Homewood and Flossmoor, which traditionally and still has, you know, a good school system by Chicagoland standards anyway. But it's become horrendously expensive to operate that school system. And there isn't any other kind, there's no businesses, you know, that are being, you know, that are bringing in revenue, that are taking any of the burden off of the homeowners. And this shows just, you know, in kind of stupefying terms, how expensive it is to run any kind of a taxing authority when you've got schools, you know, uppermost as the thing glopping out to the tax revenue, and you don't have any way of, you know, loading any of the burden for this onto businesses that may be able to, you know, absorb it in you know, better fashion. And this has dogged the south suburbs for a long time, and it's now becoming, you know, a pressure point where, as you say, Nancy, people are going to be abandoning houses, they're going to be not keeping them up, they're going to be, you know, selling them at any price to get out from under this tax burden. And this is just going to make the problem worse.
How do you sell a place in Dixmoor at any price? To who?
Well, you try to sell to some investor, somebody who's, you know, who doesn't have the same concerns as an owner, or a single person, or even a small family or a big family trying to foot this tax bill. And this is, you know, ripening the pot, I think, for institutional investors who are going to see an opportunity, and they've got the leverage to, you know, try to get these tax bills whittled down somehow. And they can pay the legal fees to do it. The average homeowner doesn't have the expertise or the money to make that happen, but an institutional investor can do it for a block of properties, and they become a, you know, participant at the table when it comes to city planning and zoning and everything else in the process. I think this is probably where we're headed.
If I plunk you two in my pickup truck, there's room, and we drive through Phoenix, I don't think you're going to think it's investment property.
Not for us, no. But I know Phoenix well. Well, for somebody who's got a very different mindset and vision than we do, that this could be some kind of, you know, it's got railroads, it's got, you know, commercial possibilities, but it's going to take a plan and money and power that no individual homeowner or even a couple of homeowners had.
But are these people there, right? Do those kids get the advantages of these school systems? I mean, by the way, what you're saying, John, is absolutely true. I grew up in Evergreen Park, and Evergreen Park had, Nance, was it Rubloff's first yes, thing was the Evergreen Plaza,
yeah,
right?
The Plaza, right.
And the Plaza was a massive source of cash, to where the taxes in Evergreen Park, with a very nice high school, Evergreen Park High School, which, by the way, they're spending so much money on now, it's scary. It's like somebody's dropping millions on them. our taxes were, what would you say, Nance? 60% of Chicago? All of a sudden, the plaza went down, and they cut deals with Walmart and Myers and Menards, and I'm going to say those guys must have cut a better deal, because I don't think they're paying anywhere near as much as the plaza did. And I'm saying that Evergreen Park's taxes are now, what, 120% of Chicago? But, I mean, the mentality, I had somebody ask from the Chicago school board pension thing, one of my worst interviews, Nance, I mean, I don't usually have too many bad ones. This guy basically said, well, you know, you got to be careful how far you go with this, because it gets to the point where people can't pay. The last person in the city better be pretty rich to pay for all this stuff. And he goes, yeah, he better be, because he owes it. Well, at some point, you can't just say Lincoln Mall closed. Nancy makes $12,000 a year and some kind of welfare system or Social Security. She's in a house worth $50,000. We'll just lob her a bill for $7,000. You can do that, but you know, I could try and be a jockey in the sixth race too. Nobody want to be the horse, right? I mean you can lob it out there. I guess my question is, do they expect these people to write this check?
Tom, I don't know. I just know that from the phone calls I have gotten since these bills came out, which is only a couple days ago, maybe a week, these people cannot afford to pay. It's definitely an area where you, what you bring in, you're spending, and there's nothing left over. So if you think somebody's got like another $3,000 or $4,000 they can contribute to a tax bill. And the second part of the problem is, let's say the bills get paid because they have an escrow at their with their taxes, they're going to go up for the $3,000 or $4,000 that they're short, and then they're going to even raise it more for the next bill coming up, right? They can't afford it, and these bills are not going to get paid. And like you're saying, we're saying that there isn't any inventory on the market. Well, this will just be a glutton of inventory. But the problem is, where are these people going to go?
Mississippi?
That's the real problem, because we just... Yesterday, we just saw the where the migrants were somewhere, you know, where they're housing them. And there just isn't enough money to take care of all the problems that are arising.
Well, Nance, work us through the mechanism. I buy a house 2 years ago. I wisely use Nancy Graham for my mortgage. And in there is going to be a tax estimate, and there's going to be insurance, and all that stuff is going to be escrowed with the bank. They're not going to count on me to pay the bill, right?
Right. Well, you pay it in your monthly, so it's easier.
Yeah, so I paid on my monthly mortgage, and all of a sudden my mortgage is, you know, $2,500, which I can barely make. You know, every stick is in that pie. And all of a sudden this thing goes up. Now, are you going to call me, the bank's going to call me and say that number now, since the escrow is now negative because they had to pay more? Are you going to call me and say the number is up another $150 a month I have to pay, or do they call me, or how does
no,
that
what
work?
What happens is let's just say you're $3,000 short. Let's say you're $3,600 short. Your tax bill's automatic. They pay it. Your tax bill's automatically going to go up $300 more, and then because you have a shortage now, right? You have to pay it back. They give you a year, so it's $300 more, plus you got to pay $3,600 more next year.
Right.
So it's going to go up another, they're going to add on another 10%. So now it's going to go to $330 more. So all of a sudden, you're supposed to have $630 more a month to pay this tax bill. And it's not going to be able to happen, because these people are.
So I have to pay for the surprise increase, and I have to accrue for that going forward, assuming it doesn't go any higher.
That is correct. Okay. It's not a pretty sight right now. And I don't know how many. I mean, homes are not immediately going to go on the market, but this is going to be an utter mess. And these people are counting on the fact that let's say it is a mistake. How do you get?
It's not a mistake.
Okay. Well, then how do you get the bank to even undo all that? And it's just.
So the bank.
I don't know how it's going
to
work.
So if your escrow account is flat, the bank spot you to $3,600. They don't expect you to write the $3,600 check today. They're going to give you a year to pay it.
Correct.
So they essentially give you a loan for that. kind of an automatic loan. When now you owe that $3,600 divided by 12, like you say, is $300 a month, plus probably some interest, and then you got to pay another $300 because now the next tax bill is going to be more.
Correct.
Do the banks know they're going to give everybody in these areas a loan all of a sudden?
These are servicers all over the country, so no. I just don't know what's going to happen, but people are getting to the edge of what they really can afford. And, you know, and the investors, I believe that John's talking about, they're just going to rent the houses and think they're going to get it from the people that are renting. That can't happen.
No. My guys, who John has met, you know, Nancy, if you ever showed up, you know, we'd buy you a drink with the boys. You and Audrey can come in here and be the ladies in the group. I should have known this, knowing you two. But these people that are these mortgage servicers that, you know,
yes,
help try and help people, if not, and they boot them out and do stuff. And you can hear some interesting stories, which you would love, of some of the states that people declare sequential bankruptcy and stuff. But that's not what we're talking about. But those people, and maybe you and Jack can explain this, even if you're a deadbeat for like years, they pay the taxes, because if there's a tax, the tax people can actually get into your house quicker than the mortgage people can, right? And get them foreclosed.
Statutory first lien.
Yeah. So I don't see how, if all of a sudden the person who has the $60,000 house goes into hack on their mortgage, nobody's going to want to be the servicer of that loan if they have to pay the taxes. Who the hell wants to do that?
That's the same problem that you have with commercial properties too. Unless you can whittle it down or strike a deal somehow, these properties have little value to someone who's just looking at them as a single site to be acquired and to have a single loan in your portfolio. I think it makes more sense if you think I can buy up the Village of Phoenix for a song and, you know, reconfigure it as some kind of, you know, distribution center or some Amazon fuel warehouse, and, you know, all this property will be back on the tax rolls, and I'll be making a gazillion dollars, and there'll be other businesses springing up too, and maybe this is some long-term plan that somebody has figured out. But clearly it looks now it's like it's just going to be a way of dispossessing a lot of people who are already struggling.
Well, Nance, I don't know if you were listening. Last week we sort of had this little bit of a theme, because we had a couple of our guys brought it up, a couple of our guests, not all guys, that, you know, why do people, somebody came up with the thing, why does somebody pay that much in rent in New York? Well, the answer is, to me, is duh. It's very simple. If I can make $500,000 a year at Goldman Sachs, I can afford $5,000 for a crummy apartment, right? One comes before the other. I don't just decide to go pay $5,000 for an apartment out in the Peoria suburbs and not have a job, right? That doesn't work. So the question is, if you have this view of Chicago that somehow, some way, I don't know how you have this view, that Chicago, somehow become this manufacturing industrial mecca that it used to be, and all of a sudden in the South Side you're going to have, you know, 50 factories that are pumping out whatever the world needs coming back from China, and you're going to have, you know, 5,000 people or 10,000 people working at, you know, $45-$50 an hour, and oh, by the way, they're all going to go to a bar and a breakfast joint and everything else. Well, then Phoenix, with the nice trail or the train capability and all that other stuff, you can visualize a future for all these places, right? I mean, because economics will take its, will move the way it normally always does. But if Chicago is not a driver, who the hell wants to live in Phoenix or Dixmoor? I mean, where am I wrong here?
I don't think you're wrong at all. There are no, you know, if you ask me, you know, is it going to rain today? I mean, I can answer you yes or no, right? But this doesn't really seem to have an answer, because you can't squeeze blood out of the people. I mean, it's not going to work. So I absolutely have no idea what they were thinking when they did these tax bills. I mean, they're doing it in an area that just can't afford what they're asking.
I'm going to say there's not one person in these towns, except unless you got something illicit going on can afford this bill.
And that's what I find absolutely scary, because I believe that is the truth. John, are you with me, or?
Yeah, this is part of a. There's other stuff that's sort of rumbling on the horizon here. We've got Harvey, which is adjacent to Phoenix, which is undergoing this political mess, similar to what's happening in Dalton, where you've got profligate spending, and vindictiveness against business owners or homeowners that don't go along with what the mayor wants. This pattern is playing out in the places that are least able to kind of get a leg up and advance somewhat. It's knocking them down politically. And now you've got this, grotesque picture with tax bills coming out. It just shows how ridiculously bloated the county budget has become. And you look around and you see practically nothing working or working very well. And, people's hopes are getting dashed left and right, and it's costing them an arm and a leg to become demoralized. I mean, this is an awfully expensive way to run something, but it's going to happen elsewhere before we're through. It's happening here in just unbelievable detail. The people who, you look at the type of houses these people have, and how anybody could say that this tax bill should jump by 100 or over 100% for what?
It's to try and tie this together a little bit, I'll give you guys a quick story. Don't get me started on railroads, because I'll talk forever on them, right? Well, anyway, there's a guy down here that was on the board. The IC line, which John used to take, the electric line, starts out very east, and then it kind of heads west, right, John? It goes Olympia Fields and so forth. Well, there's a lot of towns between the Olympia Fields line, the electric line, and the border that are not served at all. Okay, so these guys are going to come up with a train that went through Harvey, Linwood, that whole slew of towns between where the IC is and the border, right, Jen and Nancy? You know the towns I'm talking about.
Yes.
So this is 5 or 6 years ago. This guy calls me up. If I tell the name, everybody know who he is. But he says, hey, can you have a beer? I want to pick your brain about the rail line. So he's showing me the routes and showing this. And I know a little bit about Southside, not as much as Jen or you, because you do the business. I said, the guy's name was Al. I said, Al, whatever you're doing here, you better do it fast, because these towns are sinking like a rock in water. If you've got your route down, they're talking about the stations and this and that and all this kind. Actually, the thing was going to leave Rock Island Station, go all the way to Vincennes at 87th, and turn back and go east to try and save to go on an existing track, which was actually a pretty dumb idea, but that was not my job. So I said, you got to do it right away. You got to say, even if there's not even a station, you stop at a street and everybody just gets off the train right there, leave the stations go. Just do it. One or two trains a day to let people know that you can live in these places and commute downtown. Well, of course, they've forgotten the whole thing now. Now we are 6 years later, maybe seven, and these are the towns we're talking about, right?
Tom, I was having it pointed out to me in 1995 that there would be a train station at Joe Orr Road, east of Halsted Street.
Yeah, yeah.
In this charming residential area, you'll be able to get on a train here, go all the way downtown, and but the planning is already done. All we have to do is get funding for track upgrade. The train tracks are already here. Blah blah blah. Tom, this is 30 years ago.
They could have run that train 10 years ago.
There wasn't a single nail put into a piece of wood to make that happen.
Well, you almost didn't need it to have train one. But anyway, the point being is, they recognize these areas had a problem, like you say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And now what they're doing is, they didn't do no train, they raised the taxes. How's that? Is that genius or what?
I just don't see how this is going to have a happy ending at all for anyone.
It will kill the county budget, for starters, because the delinquency rate on these tax bills is going to take a toll on everybody's tax bill. It'll have to. So you're just going to see this floating crap game of inflated bills go around and around as they reassess all the townships, and everybody will be paying far more than they can reasonably budget to pay. And it's lose-lose all the way around. You would think at some point the spending madness could be ratcheted back a little bit to prevent something like this from happening. Instead, it's going to take down everybody in the process.
That's I guess my question is, we got a dasher. My first thought would be, they're not going to get the checks, and they're thinking they are. Now, what you're saying is, they are going to get the checks. The first ones, the banks are just going to go into hack, and the banks are the ones that are going to take the hit. Maybe.
Or if the people are escrowing, yes. If they're not escrowing, they're not going to get the money.
It's not going to get the check. Now, do you think the idiots at the county think they're going to get it? I mean, do they think when they send a whatever the bill is to my building down here with four floors empty, they're going to get the check? Are they that foolish?
They're assuming they will get it.
I agree with John. They're assuming they're going to get it.
I think in this building they probably will, but I don't see them getting the check at 175 West Jackson. To you, it's 30% full.
Or a lot of other places.
Yeah, isn't it scary to think that this is just an answer to something?
It's pretty messed up. Nance, am I going to see you this weekend?
I hope so.
Well, we got Thursday off. We got Wednesday afternoon off. And there's got to be somewhere in there I can see you.
And John's coming too.
Well, we'd like to see John.
Yeah. Friday looks good. That's kind of a quiet day in between the holiday and the weekend.
Now, John's thinking about having dinner Friday night. Maybe you and I can take a ride down.
Sure.
Maybe we'll let's talk about it. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 62. Really good stuff, guys. I can't say it was enlightening, happy stuff, but it's good stuff.
It's not happy stuff, guys. It's
no.
Not.
Well, have a good week. I'll see the Bodies, yeah. I hope. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.